being a physician is hard. Being married is hard. I put these together and life can get really hard. Unless, like in residency, we learn from the experts and try to improve. And today, I have one of those experts, an expert on physician marriage. Now, this is part two of two. So if you missed it, go to last week's episode and check out part one first. Dr. Michael Myers is a professor of clinical psychiatry and recent vice chair of education and director of training in the Department of Psychiatry and Behavioral Sciences at SUNY Downstate in Brooklyn. He's a specialist in physician health and the author of many books, including most recently, Physicians with Lived Experience, How Their Stories Offer Clinical Guidance. Most importantly to this episode, he's also the author of Doctors' Marriages, A Look at the Problems and Their Solutions. Dr. Myers lectures widely through North America and beyond on common stresses of medical training and practice, like burnout and moral injury, depression, substance use disorders, PTSD, marital discord, and more, and how stigma in the house of medicine works against symptomatic doctors receiving the care they deserve. You can find more about him at MichaelFMyers.com. You're listening to Succeed in Medicine, the show for practicing physicians who want to master the parts of their career and life that med school never prepared us for. From interpersonal skills to career navigation to the essential information every physician needs. I'm Dr. Bradley Block, and in every episode, we bring you brass tacks advice and immediately applicable insights from world-class experts so you can feel prepared wherever your MD takes you and build a life in medicine that's sustainable, rewarding, and actually worth all those years of sacrifice. Dr. Michael Myers, thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Thanks for inviting me. I'm happy to be here.
So you said they can be coached on communication. So one thing that keeps on coming up is these isolated times, right? Like retreats, weekends, dates, time away, where it's just you and your spouse communicating. So let's say you've procured that time, but the communication still not your forte, right? Like you don't know where to begin.
No. So this is where, for instance, I'm a big believer in professional help because there are so many, many couples I looked after where they would save up things to bring into my office because they've tried to talk about these things before and it ends up with something happening, one or the other getting defensive or the other one sort of breaking down crying or the other one, you know, running out of the room or something like that. They know that these are difficult subjects. And so therefore, to have a third party there as somebody who can assist with that, because I'm able to kind of help with the language and find a way that it's easier for them to say what they need to say to the other. And I mean, I could think of, you know, many examples, and I've written about these things in papers and books before as examples. But you can see that the person is struggling so that I can say, so Brad, just listening to what you've been saying, are you trying to tell your wife that you kind of miss her? I'm making this up, of course.
Yeah.
And then you look at me and say, I think you're right. And then your eyes get kind of misty-eyed and her eyes get kind of misty-eyed because it just hasn't come out that way. It's come out in some sort of a distorted way where she hasn't felt, oh my God, my husband misses me. Like I'm kind of lonely. I'm creating an example, for instance, where maybe, you know, the husband has felt that he'd like to see more of his wife, but she's busy with many different things. And he just hasn't felt, I just don't know how to tell her that I really miss her.
In medicine, we have to make decisions on the fly with incomplete information. We have to be decisive. We are the ones ultimately that are responsible. And so we have to feel like we have some semblance of control. And so that style of management might not work out in a marriage. And so, right, they don't work for us.
That's fine.
So medicine's very hierarchical and relationships shouldn't be. So how do we prevent that style of communication, of management from bleeding into our relationships?
I'll give you an example. Again, this is off the top, but a couple sitting opposite me, and they said, that, you know, where the wife says, there's something I need to speak to my husband about, and I haven't been able to do it at home. So this is why I brought it to our session this week, Dr. Myers. Is that okay with you? I said, it's fine with me. But then I'll turn to the husband and said, how do you feel about that? They say, well, kind of scared. I said, okay, let's just start and see where that goes. So very gently, she tries to explain what it is, the sort of thing. But following your lead, I find that it's difficult for him to just listen. And because he's trying to come up with a solution or something like that.
Still trying to come up with a diagnosis.
Yes.
Right? Like, I've got my differential. You're leading me in different directions. And now I've got to come up with my treatment plan. Okay. Yes. I'm going to dictate it when we're done.
You just said something very apt, because I've heard that from the wife say to the husband, don't give me a diagnosis. That's Dr. Myers' job, not yours. You're my husband. Okay. So therefore, then I'll have to say to you, say if you're the husband, say, so Brad, you're going to get a chance to speak. Let your wife just hear her out.
And there aren't people in the waiting room waiting for your attention. And, you can take your time with this.
That's right. In fact, I'll do things like I'll look at my watch and I'll say, we've still got 40 minutes, Brad. Just kind of chill. Just chill. And so then she'll come to her conclusion or whatever and won't go on and on. And I'll say, Brad, because they'll sometimes look at me. I'll say, talk to your wife about how you feel about what she's just said, or that sort of thing. And when he's sort of able to do that, to take a few deep breaths or something, it's so wonderful because it's inside you. And sometimes I will, even kind of provide language or whatever, because some person, they may get into name calling, which is most of us will get very defensive if we're called a name or something. So I have to kind of help with softer language. So if, for instance, you were to say to her something like, the problem is that you're so stubborn. And then, of course, So I said, Brad, let's just take a step back. Obviously, your perception of your wife is that she's stubborn. But what I'm wondering is if you could put that in another way, that you're right. I guess sometimes I feel when I'm trying to make a point, I don't know if I make you defensive or if your back hurts up or whatever, but I feel you're really digging your heels. So that's very different than her being cold, stubborn. She'll say, oh, well, put like that. Yeah, I'm sorry. I didn't realize you perceived me that way. Or she might say, I'm sorry, but you are right. I do tend to get that way at times. And when and if that happens, maybe if you just kind of hold up your hand or something, that would be my cue that I need to take a couple of deep breaths and just.
So I think what you're saying is about the communication piece is, if we can use this stubbornness as an example, is you have to make sure when you're communicating that you understand the purpose of your communication. And that is so that the other person understands the idea. And if you say it in a way that could be perceived as offensive, then you are communicating so that you feel better, not so that you can solve the problem. And you have to make sure that you are communicating in such a way that it's packaged in a way that the person can hear it and understand it and internalize it.
Yeah.
And if you're being aggressive about it, you're not accomplishing that intention. Yeah. You are just doing it so that you can unload. And that's not how you make progress.
That's right. And also too, Brad, I think what you've also just, this kind of emphasizes how helpful it is to have a third party. Because that person, my job is always to not take sides, but just try to help each of them get their point across in a clearer way, or a more coherent way, or a softer way, or a more loving way, or something like that. So that's where you can benefit so much from having a third party.
We've been assuming something in our conversation. We've been using certain pronouns, which are a problem. We've been assuming that the physician is the male and that the spouse is the female. And that is problematic. And for the listeners, I want to apologize for that. And because of that, I think we should turn it around and say, is there something different about the dynamic when the physician is female and the non-physician spouse is a male? Is there something different about this dynamic that we need to consider?
Yeah. And with this, it's the woman who's the physician and the husband is not. Right. That's another thing. One thing that there is pretty, and I know this sounds a little bit like a stereotype, however, women physicians will also say that being a physician is important to me, but it's just one part of my identity. I mean, there's so much else to me beside this. One is that having a relationship, and hopefully a successful relationship, is very important to me. Being a mother is important to me. Being a volunteer is important to me. Being a daughter to my aging parents is important to me. Being a volunteer in the community is important to me. You know, and the list can go on. And also just having some time for myself. So they'll say that's a pretty tall order. But what they're also saying is that, you know, I'm not totally identified by my career or what I do. Now, having said that, though, there are some heterosexual marriages where there is some role reversal, where the woman is very clear that her forte is really in medicine, that she is damn good at it, and she is. But the good news, though, is the husband fits in with that beautifully because he's pretty happy overall. He could be running the home. He could be doing more than like 50% of the childcare or something, making a lot of decisions. I mean, I've looked after couples where she says, you know, I'm kind of nurturant with my patients, but it's funny. I'm not that way so much with the kids. My husband is, thank God.
But then where does the conflict come from in those relationships?
The conflict can come in, though, is when and if still the person at home, or even if he is doing paid work outside the home, you know, has money coming in, feels that somehow he's taken for granted, though, and feels that she too needs to kind of put a lid on some of this. That, look, I do realize that your work is very important to you. And, you know, both as a functioning clinician, as well as a researcher or as a department chair or something like that. And I'm proud of you. But I got to tell you, there are times when I just feel lonely.
So the same issues, but just maybe less likely, less severe overall, but really no different.
It's a problem, though, if he hasn't been conscious of that and can't articulate it. And next thing she finds out is one of two things, that she's coming home from a long day and he's been drinking, or she's finding some mysterious phone calls and he started an affair. And then she's thinking, oh my God, we're in trouble here. See what I mean? When people can identify.
Yeah. So what are the red flags before something like that happens? Exactly. Right? Like, how do we know, how do we catch that in a relationship before it gets to that point?
The people who catch it are also ones who just have an ability to kind of spit it out and say, look, I think we're in trouble. I was away on the weekend and I found myself, you know, I met somebody at a bar. It didn't go very far, but I don't know. It was just kind of weird. I was glad to get home from the conference thinking that I'm kind of lonely. I'm worried I'm going to have an affair or something like that. Just to spit it out. That'll get the attention of the spouse.
Certainly. Yeah.
Yes. And they can maybe kind of dissect that and see, well, thanks for telling me. I didn't realize that you're kind of lonely or restless or whatever, as you've articulated now. We need to look at this. We need to talk about this. We need to, you know, make some changes or something.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, Brad, too often that is not conscious and it actually happens. But when and if that happens, though, again, if they can nip it in the bud and deal with it right away and get some help.
Yeah.
In fact, the research shows that the vast majority of couples, when there has been an extramarital affair, vast majority do not split.
Interesting.
Yeah. They go.
That's not a get out of jail free card for all those listeners.
Yeah.
It's not okay, even though the vast majority don't split up. Don't take that as permission.
It's not
listeners
like sort of giving permission.
Talking to you.
It's got more to do with the fact that they actually learn from this. They get some help. And the way their marriage then comes together. And there's so many couples out there will say, there was a silver lining to that nightmare.
Yeah. But it can't be the same. The marriage can't be the same after something like that.
No. Oh, no. They go into what they call a new normal.
If you like this podcast episode, you're going to love the other shows over at the Doctor Podcast Network. For instance, The Scalpel and Sword, hosted by Dr. Lee Nagendran Sharma, a previous guest on this show, who discussed conflict resolution, covers topics like industrial psychology and personal development, ethics, and you guessed it, conflict resolution in healthcare. Check out Scalpel and Sword. You know, you had mentioned before same-sex marriages in physician couples. And so certainly there are going to be issues that are unique to them. But I mean, within the dynamic of having a physician in the relationship, that there's something that we haven't spoken about that bears mentioning.
The thing I'd like to say is that the commonalities, I think, in all relationships are there in terms of basic communication, things like that. When it comes to same-sex couples, you kind of look at the way they normally communicate with each other. When I've looked after same-sex male couples, some of them will say that we have really trouble kind of talking about some of our feelings. And I think we're more apt to kind of avoid things and just sort of, you know, I've decided to run marathons or something. And my husband is overworked and that kind of thing. But actually, we're not dealing with things. Sometimes lesbian couples will say, we exhaust each other because we kind of overtalk and overthink and et cetera, we kind of like overcommunicate and then drive each other nuts or something, that type of thing. And so, I mean, these are kind of stereotypes, but you just kind of work with that and whatever it is that does seem to be causing this rift and why things are no longer as intimate as they once were. I take a very detailed history from couples when I assess them, both the couple together. I want to know, you know, from each of them really what the concerns are. And this is what I teach. I spend an hour with each of them getting a very detailed personal and family history and their background, because I need to know how they grew up and some things that, you know, they were exposed to, what they had in the way of relationships or role models for each person. And then that gives me a broader perspective on how I can help.
Wow, you and I have very different practices. My history is more, so when did your ear start get clogged? A week ago? And oh, look, there's earwax. Okay. You feel better? Fantastic. Have a nice day. So I also want to talk about the dual physician marriage, yeah, right? Where, and again, it's communication. And I do want to loop back because that's the recurring theme. At the beginning, we talked about finding opportunities for uninterrupted communication. And then we've talked about how to go about the communication and whether a third party is needed and some of the red flags that might come up. But are there issues that are unique to dual physician marriages that bear mentioning?
Yeah, I would say yes and no. There certainly are times when the fact that both individuals being doctors, it sort of depends on the stage of marriage. Some of them will use kind of a lot of intellectualization and how they communicate with each other. And because they're both kind of bringing sort of a skill set from work that seems to work, it depends a little bit on their branch of medicine, for instance. But still, though, where there's a way, there's a will, and that sort of thing. So if there's a sort of sense like, look, you know, yes, we're both doctors, but we really need help, you know, in this realm, that's probably what's most important. And they also realize, too, sure, we're both high earners, but we need to work out how we're going to sort of divide up the balance here. Because some couples, the default position most often in heterosexual couples is the man continuing to work full-time and his physician wife working part-time during the childbearing and child-rearing years. But that can be worked with as well. Yeah, and now with more men taking paternity leave and things like that.
It seems like there should be check-ins, right? Like if that's the situation, then the man should be grateful that he has that opportunity and should be periodically checking in to make sure that that dynamic still works and offer the opportunity to change the dynamic. Right. So be appreciative for what you're being given. And despite your success and your accolades, it is not something that you're doing on your own. And so give someone else an opportunity to do this.
I think our culture of medicine, our society of medicine still needs to be more respectful of those men and fathers who elect to take some time away from their careers, whether it's part-time however they do it, they should still be seen as dedicated and as committed to their field as others, just like women should be made to feel that way as well. For them to feel, oh, they're not really dedicated, you know, that sort of thing, it's not fair. It's not honoring the importance of family life and on the stages of that. And so, because the men who do that, if they feel kind of supported in the workplace, especially by their other male peers, that helps them a lot. Yeah. And as you say, they review it. It only be this way for a couple of years, and then they do a switch.
Yeah.
Because both parties need to feel respected.
You said both parties want to feel respected. So I want to go back to the single physician marriage where, you know, let's say hypothetical situation. They met in medical school, right? In medical school, and they got married, and they matched in a city where neither of them know anybody. So now you've picked up and you've left with this person to a new city. Most of your friends are the physician's friends because it's their colleagues and their co-residents and their significant others. And then you either go into fellowship, you find a job, maybe it's back where you came from somewhere else, but ultimately it's following the physician's job. How do we prevent the spouse from feeling like the sidecar on a motorcycle, right? That's just along for the ride. How do we make them feel like that's not the situation?
Right. That's also a very good question, because that's not an uncommon dynamic, especially if there's been some sort of a promise. Now, once I get my fellowship and get my first job, then it's going to be your turn. Okay. Whatever that might be. It could be like going back to school at that point. It could be going back to the workplace part-time or full-time, things like that. But too often, the spouse feels that was just BS. That is not allowed. It's not honored. They're made to feel that, you know, somehow or other, they're not holding up their end of the deal when they feel due.
Yeah.
And as you say, that is significant. What you said, you know, you're moving because of his career. And if she's meeting lots of people in the neighborhood and stuff like that, and that all works out fine. But if she's going to be uprooted or something like that, and then he doesn't sort of understand, like, this is really being dislodged. It would be like him being.
Hey, but you get to be a doctor's wife, or you got to be a doctor's husband.
Yeah.
You know, then all the accolades, isn't this so cool? I'm going to make a bunch of money.
Right.
That should make up for everything.
That's right.
Yeah. I guess it doesn't. So what you're saying is there needs to be some parity here.
Right.
Yeah. There needs to be some way to reconcile the sacrifices that were made by the significant other during the training years and the uprooting, so that there's something being done in exchange, not just you get to be a doctor's significant other.
And I always tell those men, I said, and please do not say to your wife, I did this all for you.
Yeah, you did it for 8-year-old you, who said one day you were going to be a doctor. Let's be clear about that. Okay, so some parting words on communication, right? So the recurring theme has always been, find time, uninterrupted time with the two of you for communication, right? Find balance between your work time and your home time, and make sure that everyone has your undivided attention. Have some transition time so that you can give that undivided attention. And then the communication, right? You had some advice on communication, some of which was finding an experienced professional to help facilitate that communication. But let's say you're not there yet, where you don't need, and you just want to be a better communicator with your spouse, right? You just need some tips. Do you have, you know, to close out the interview, just one or two parting tips for the listeners to help them be better communicators with their spouse when they are in that isolated, uninterrupted time?
One of the things, so just take risks. Like, for instance, we now have this protected time, this sort of thing, because too many times I've heard wives, so I said to my husband, what would you like to talk about? And he said, I don't know. You go first, or something like that.
Now, what do you want for dinner? Yeah.
So she might. But then if she does, though, then I think it's important that he also bring up some that's been, you know, on his mind or something. And these don't have to be provocative things either.
Yeah.
Just could be things, you know, could we talk about planning our next vacation?
Okay. So we're not talking about bondage. We're talking about.
That's right.
Be vulnerable. I think, is that what you mean by take risks? Is be vulnerable?
Vulnerable. This is one of the beauties of marriage, if you feel safe and loved, then you can take those risks of saying things that really tell us a lot about, yeah, I've got a deep-seated insecurity about us not making it because of the fact that my folks split up when I was growing up. So that's why I'm trying so hard and there's never enough money. And I guess that's why I made that statement to you that I'm doing it all for you. Because I guess at one level, I'm trying to be a good provider. But I realize now that, you know, that a lot of that is just, you know, it's not work. Yes, I mean, we've got to pay the bills, have savings, stuff. This is one of my insecurities or things like that. Because who else can you do this with besides maybe a therapist or whatever? By the way, that's another thing too. When people go into individual therapy with couples' problems, I always tell them, make sure though that you convert that individual therapy into couples therapy at some point, where it's going to seem like the spouse is being left out at home. Everything's being talked about with the therapist. I don't need to talk at home because I go and see my therapist every week.
Yeah.
That's not cool. So.
Fantastic. Okay. So if the listeners want to take a deeper dive in all of your material, because you're a proliferative author, or they want to find, you know, other resources where they can learn more from you, where do we find you? Where's your online presence?
Okay. Well, probably the easiest thing is to go to my website, which is www.michaelfmyers.com. And I've got a lot of stuff that I've written there, but also references to other things and a lot of blog pieces and sort of podcasts that I've done with various things as well. But the other thing too, I would suggest is sometimes word of mouth. Sometimes individuals will just ask a friend, have you guys ever gone for couples work? Is there anybody you'd recommend or somebody may just volunteer that. Some primary care physicians actually even keep lists of people who do couples work. And as I mentioned to you earlier, people who are observant or religiously affiliated, sometimes there's things through their faith that offer, you know, marital assistance or just marital enrichment, things like that. There's a lot out there, a lot to Google. There's just a lot of stuff. Consult Dr. Google, it's recent.
Yes. Well, fantastic advice. So Michael F. Myers, MYERS.com. And Dr. Myers, thank you so much for giving us your time, your expertise, and all you've done for your patients and physician marriages.
Thanks a lot. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for listening. I have a favor to ask. You listened to the episode until the end, which means either you fell asleep or you really liked the episode. So please write us a 5-star review, take a screenshot, and email it to me so I can send you a quick guide on how to earn patient trust in 20 seconds or less. Email me at brad@physiciansguidetodoctoring.com and feel free to suggest a topic or guest. I take your requests seriously. The views expressed on this episode are those of the interviewer and the interviewee and do not represent the views of their employer or even their significant other. Even though the magic of podcasting makes it sound like I'm talking directly to you, this is not a doctor-patient relationship, and this is not medical advice or financial advice or legal advice or really any advice. Thanks again for listening to Succeed in Medicine.